westward, from what was then Czechoslovakia, through Austria, then Italy, settling eventually in Montreal, Canada. Along the way, a clutter of languages introduced themselves into my life. German in preschool, Italian-speaking friends, the francophone streets of East Montreal. Linguistic experience congealed, though, once my five siblings and I started school in English. As with many immigrants, this marked the moment when English became, unofficially and over the grumbling of my parents, especially my father, our family language. What could my parents do? They were outnumbered. Czech began its slow retreat from our daily life. I entered kindergarten, knowing only a few words of English. Upon ascending to first grade, I was mortally offended when my teacher, taking inventory of the immigrant kids in her class on the first day of school, asked me, "What about you, Julie? Do you know a little English?" Indignant, I announced, in what I'm sure was still a thick Slavic accent, "I don't know a little English. I know a lot of English." A few years later, no teacher could distinguish my speech from that of my native-born peers. Today, people who know me are startled to learn that English was the fifth language I learned to speak, so thoroughly has it elbowed its predecessors aside. Many would applaud the efficiency with which our family settled into English. It's what exemplary immigrants do. And to me, at that time, the price of assimilation was invisible. Like most young people, I was far more intent on hurtling myself into my future than on tending my ancestral roots. And that future, it was clear, was an English-speaking one. In my world, Czech was a small language, spoken only on our tiny domestic island by people genetically related to me. English was the big, horizon-hungry language, the language of the teachers I adored or had to appease, the language of the TV shows my friends endlessly rehashed, of the books that held me in thrall, and the books I thought I might one day write. It was the language of dreams and goals. But there was a price. As my siblings and I distanced ourselves from the Czech language, a space widened between us and our parents, especially my father, whose English sat on him like a poorly tailored suit. It was as if my parents' life in their home country and the values that defined that life didn't translate credibly into another language. It was much easier to rebel against them in English. Even the English names for our parents encouraged dissent. The tender Czech words we'd used, maminka, tatínek, are impossible to pronounce with contempt, but they have no corresponding forms. In English, the sweet but childish mommy and daddy are soon abandoned for mom and dad, words that, we discovered, lend themselves perfectly well to adolescent snark. I've wondered, recently, whether things might have been different for my father had his children remained rooted in their native tongue. Over time, we spoke together less and less. I remember watching him grow frustrated at his powerlessness to pass on to his children the legacies he most longed to leave. An ardent religiosity, the nurturing of family ties, pleasure in the music and traditions of his region, which I'm now ashamed to say we often mocked, and a tender respect for ancestors. All of these became diluted by the steady flow of our new experiences, narrated in English, laced with Anglophone aspiration and individualism. As we entered adulthood and dispersed all over North America into our self-reliant lives, my father gave up. He moved back home. For the next two decades, I lived my adult life, fully absorbed into the English-speaking universe, even adding American citizenship to my Canadian one. My dad was the only person with whom I regularly spoke Czech, if phone calls every few months could be described as regularly, and if my clumsy sentences patched together with abundant English could be called speaking Czech. My Czech heritage began